Afternoon, seeing a quorum, Education Committee for the Senate is called to order. First on our agenda today is Senate File 452. Do we have Senator Vandeveer here? Welcome, Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Somebody move the bill.
Mm-hmm. Senator DeCryf moves Senate File 452.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 452 proposes a five-year pilot project that would establish a process to merge Forest Lake Area School, Independent School District 831, and Lakes International Academy. And this proposal is designed to offer more options for kids as far as language immersion and allowing them to progress through the full 12th grade. And so here to explain this and why we need your help today is the superintendent, Linda Mazden.
Welcome to the Education Committee. Could you introduce yourself for the tape, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Linda Mazden, and I'm the superintendent of schools in Forest Lake. I've been a teacher and an administrator in Forest Lake for 30 years, and it's my privilege to speak to you regarding Senate File 452. Thank you for this opportunity to speak before you to discuss a proposed pilot project that I strongly believe would greatly enhance educational opportunities for both elementary and secondary school students in the Forest Lake area. This is a bill for a pilot project that would provide additional and enhanced world language opportunities for the students of our district and the students of Lakes International Academy, a charter school that's located in our district. It is a bill that would allow the two entities to join together in a partnership that maximizes innovation and provides a structure to support students and staff. Despite the apparent complexities, and there certainly are complexities when attempting to join a charter school with a school district, the concept behind this bill is actually quite simple. Under this five-year pilot project, Lakes International Language Academy would temporarily suspend its status as a charter school and become a school within District 831's system. The LELA students would remain at the same building they're currently attending. The teaching staff at the school would remain essentially the same, and the great teaching that's being done at that school would continue as it has in the past. No disruption to the learning environment would need to occur. The school would be financed, regulated, supervised, held accountable, and basically operate in the same manner as every other school in the Forest Lake area school system, with the following exceptions. Number one, during the five-year term of the pilot project, LELA employees would remain at-will employees, or if they chose, could organize as an independent bargaining unit. The nonprofit entity that currently operates the charter school would maintain the current lease, and lease aid would continue as it had when the school was a full charter. The teachers at LELA would continue to be part of the QCOMP program. Teachers who are part of the Forest Lake Education Association are currently not part of that program, and they would remain as non-participants unless a new agreement between the district and the union could be worked out. In all other respects, LELA would be defined as a district elementary school during the term of this pilot project. District 831 would be the agency of oversight and would provide reporting to the Minnesota Department of Education as it does with any other school in our district. The Forest Lake Area School Board would be the ultimate authority over LELA, as again it is with any other school in the district. The reason a bill is necessary for this pilot project is because there is currently no provision under state law that allows existing charter schools to become part of an existing school district. This bill is an opportunity for our school district, an opportunity for Lakes International, and an opportunity for the education community in Minnesota to see firsthand the next important step in the charter school movement that our state has undertaken the past decade. It is a chance to see whether the innovative approaches born of a successful charter school can be brought into a school district and thereby be fully realized in a more traditional setting. Questions have been raised regarding the reason why this pilot project would be beneficial, And why would a charter school want to join a traditional school district and vice versa? That these questions are raised provides some indication of the separation and at times competitive nature of charter schools and school districts. As I mentioned earlier, I've worked in Forest Lake for many years and have worked with the staff at Lila for many years as well. I was a member of the task force that first looked at immersion as a possibility in our community. Although the Forest Lake School Board decided not to move ahead at that point with immersion education, as the director of teaching and learning at that time, I continued to work with the Lila staff once they became a charter school on many projects, such as applying for grants, organizing a delegation of Chinese students visiting Forest Lake for a week-long visit, and most importantly, developing the secondary program for the alumni of Lila as they enter seventh grade and begin their secondary career. We don't just think this is a good idea. We know it's the right thing to do from the response of students and parents who participate. That first group of seventh graders who entered our school district to continue their immersion experience are now in 10th grade and are thriving. When I became superintendent almost 2 years ago, I began conversations with Mr. Hedlund, director of Lila, on what was next. We certainly could have said we were doing many great things, which we were, and left it at that. Instead, we challenged ourselves to explore next steps, which, as it turns out, no one else has taken. New can be difficult, challenging, and frightening, but it can also be exciting, hopeful, and the right thing to do. We believe this is the right thing to do for our students who deserve the best programs we can offer. We offer programming now that is unique and exists in very few places, and perhaps we should be satisfied with that. But we believe we will have more to offer students by having Lila join Forest Lake in this pilot project. Members of this committee, I ask that you support this bill and allow this pilot project to move forward. You have before you examples of highly successful educational institutions whose leaders wish to join together in a partnership that would not only greatly benefit the students of our respective schools, but would allow you, members of the legislature, to see what could potentially be accomplished when educational innovation is fully developed. I thank you very much for allowing me the time to speak with you about this important project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Manson. I just want you to know that the table looks a little bare today only because we have another committee going on. So certainly they'll be following along as they can. Okay. Members, do you have any questions for Ms. Manson? Senator Vandeveer.
Madam Chair, we should adopt, if someone could move the EA-0325 amendment. That puts on the amendments that were done in the House and puts a bill in the shape we'd like it in for discussion today.
Do we have that amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, I'll move that amendment.
Thank you. And I think this just puts it in the shape we'd like it in. We could discuss it from this point. A lot of these amendments were adopted in the House and clarify some issues that had come up there. So.
Okay. Do you have any other comments on the amendment, Senator Vandeveer?
I do not.
Okay. Do you have any other testifiers? Is there anyone else who would like to testify?
We do, if you'd like to adopt.
Oh, yes. All those in favor of adopting the amendment to put the shape in the bill the author would like, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do have other testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Could you introduce yourself, please, for the tape?
I am Cam Hedlund, Director of Lakes International Language Academy.
Go ahead, Mr. Camden.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Education Committee, and honored guests. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of the proposed pilot project. Dr. Matson has laid out the mechanics of the proposed pilot project. I would like to talk briefly about our history together and why I believe this project should go forward. Before becoming the director of Lakes International Language Academy, I was a Forest Lake Area Schools elementary principal. I was part of a task force to study immersion education along with other Forest Lake leaders, including Dr. Matson and the folks who went on to start Lila. I became so convinced that immersion was one of the best ideas and one of the best financial values in education that I knew I needed to become involved. The charter school was just forming, and they believe they talked me into joining them to help start Lakes International Language Academy. Little did they know that I was hoping they would ask and couldn't wait to get started. When you consider students leaving Leela in the sixth grade are fully bilingual for the same educational dollar as the monolingual school down the street, it's a pretty good deal. With the national push for teaching critical needs languages for national defense and economic reasons, it has become more important than ever to find cost-effective ways to teach language to more students. We have recently added a third language, Chinese, to our program. All first through third graders receive approximately 1 hour per week of instruction. That program has created enough interest that tomorrow night I will be recommending to our board that we add a Chinese immersion track. We believe that as a nation becomes aware of the importance of language skills and being able to communicate with our global partners, the thirst for language education will continue to grow. Locally, we are already seeing that capacity demonstrated by strong enrollment in District 831's partial Spanish immersion program and at Leela. Dr. Mattson and Forest Lake Area Schools share our vision of having multiple language experiences available for all students, regardless of age. From our first days of being a charter, Forest Lake Area Schools has partnered with us on many facets of our program. Not only the traditional areas such as transportation and food service, but areas such as special education, extracurriculars, nursing, and other areas that let us spend more time developing program and less time managing minutia. However, the program that has received national attention is the 7th through 12th grade Spanish immersion maintenance program provided by Forest Lake Area Schools for our students and with our continued consultation. I was just talking the other day to Mark Peterson, one of the principals of that program. He was telling me the welcome challenge of trying to find enough time in our students' schedules for electives. He went on to explain that several of our former students who are enrolled in 2 to 3 content courses taught in Spanish are also enrolled in French and doing very well, in addition to holding significant parts in the school play and participating in other activities. I believe by being a part of the Forest Lake Area Schools, we can together develop those programs to a much greater extent. We also believe that the potential for those wishing second and third languages for their children is almost limitless, and that all students should have access to immersion programs. The flexibility of this pilot project gives the added push to make these ideas reality and with much greater speed and efficiency than either of us could do alone. We truly believe that we can be a model demonstrating the benefits and efficiencies of collaboration while at the same time be an experimental site where innovations can flourish and take root. I believe the state will be amazed at what a hybrid partnership will be able to accomplish. I understand there will be some who will testify against the bill. My assessment is this: those who don't really know us are often skeptical of our motivation. When we say we want more and better educational opportunities for all students in our area, often they respond, "No, really, what do you hope to get out of this?" And those who know us well say, "Wonderful, I hope this goes through because we know the potential you have. My hope is that you will get to know us well enough to be in the second camp. Thank you for your time, and we do welcome your questions."
Thank you, Mr. Hedlund. Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Vandeveer, I'm always open to new and innovative ideas, and so I read your proposal with interest, but I'm a little bit concerned about the funding structure because it looks to me like under this bill that the charter school would be given a regular per pupil funding amount that would occur with all of our public schools, but in addition, they would still qualify for building lease aid. And so to me, that seems like, are we under a charter school funding model, or are we saying they get a per pupil regular amount, and where does the referendum part come in, and how does all the funding work? And perhaps Mr. Nauman might need to give some advice on that as well.
Senator Vandeveer.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I think Mr. Martini is the school finance officer, could probably help us with that.
Mr. Martini, please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Larry Martini. I've been the business manager for Forest Lake Area Schools for 10 years.
Mr. Martini.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are looking at lease aid to continue during this pilot project for only the period of 5 years. As we've examined this, it wouldn't be prudent to expend the resources to satisfy the bondholders if at the end of this pilot project we had to expend those resources again because LELA reverted back to a charter.
Madam
Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Then why wouldn't you just, I'm sorry, tell me your name again.
My name is Larry Martini, business manager for Forest Lake.
Thank you, Mr. Martini. Why wouldn't you then just keep your financial structure as you currently have it? Why would you be reverting to the traditional per pupil funding mechanism and maintaining the building lease aid?
Mr. Martini.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Interestingly enough, this was a fiscal note for the Senate created on March 17th, and the structures for charters, which are 100% aid, are often an aid levy mix for traditional schools like Forest Lake School District. What occurs here is actually $150,000 of annual savings for the state because of that. And when that's multiplied by the 5 years of this pilot project, it's $750,000. When we look at it impacting us locally, that $150,000 on an annual basis is less than 1% of local impact.
Senator Bonner.
And Madam Chair, is that because now you're going to be able to access the levy dollars as well?
Mr. Martini.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member Bonoff, with referendum excess levy dollars, those are the formula for that is on a per resident basis, not a student serve basis. So there won't be an increase in total levy dollars in that component. So there's no double dipping here.
Okay.
What is occurring is simply a funding stream like operating capital would shift from 100% aid to an aid levy mix, realizing that savings. And I believe the fiscal note is included in the blue packet.
Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman, anything you want to say in addition to that?
Madam Chair, not unless there's a specific question.
Okay. Do you have any other testifiers, Senator Vandeveer?
We would like Shannon
Peterson.
And wear those glasses.
Could you introduce yourself for the tape, please?
My name is Shannon Peterson. I'm the Assistant Director at Lakes International Language Academy.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Education Committee, and honored guests. My name is Shannon Peterson. I'm currently the Assistant Director at Lakes International Language Academy, and I am one of the school's founders. The shared dream of the Charter's Founding Board is what we have for our kids right now in grades K through 6. We're proud of what we can offer our students with our established language immersion program and with our International Baccalaureate Primary Years program. We're proud of our enthusiastic staff and our involved parents. Yet, as the word spreads in the area about language immersion, we have not been able to fit all of the students whose parents want to take advantage of this offering. So a few years back when Forest Lake decided that they were going to start offering an immersion track, our response was, great, an opportunity for more kids. We've got somewhere for the kids we know of on our waiting list to go and still get a language immersion experience. We want as many students as possible to have the gift of bilingualism. This proposed pilot project is a natural extension of our past collaborations with Forest Lake Area Schools. I believe that a formalized relationship will provide expanded opportunities for students. With Forest Lake Area Schools' strong reputation, their ability to reach district residents and their existing facilities, combined with their robust secondary language programs and LELA's immersion expertise, a formalized partnership will certainly allow more area students to learn about and take part in a language immersion education. The partnership would also allow for a stronger program articulated from K through 12. As it stands, both the elementary and secondary teachers are willing to work together to make the curriculum work for students. However, we always wonder what will happen down the road should there be a change in school board or superintendent. We would like for LELA to have a more formal seat at the table for the long-term stability of the program K through 12.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Are there any other testifiers in favor of the bill?
John Cairns.
Welcome, Mr. Ahrens. Could you introduce yourself, please?
It's John Cairns.
Cairns.
C-A-I-R-N-S, and I'm counsel to Lila. I've helped them write the language, and I'm here to answer questions technically on what the language might mean. It's not my role as counsel to get into the policy side. That's for my client and the district to do. And I would simply comment that I've been around the charter school industry since we and others, including Mr. Nathan, who may testify, wrote the bill in 1991, 1990, and it's a large part of my law practice here and around the country. This is, as a concept, this is an effort to say to the local people, do something that hasn't been done before that you think is valuable. And I will say as well that across the country, right now, there's an awful lot of thinking going on about trying to bring what's learned in charter schools into the traditional system more effectively. And I would say among the various efforts around the country where this is happening, this is really a rather large step forward, which is why we want to do it on a pilot project. So I'll be glad to field specific technical questions, but that's
thank you, Mr. Cairns.
Overview. Thank you.
Hi, Jen. Thank you. Senator Vandeveer, do you have anyone else that you'd like to testify in favor of this bill?
I have one more, I believe, school board member, Karen Moorhead.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Moorhead.
Karen Moorhead, Forest Lake, Minnesota. And as you can see, I used a little extra effort to get here today because I think it's so very important for you to hear from someone in the community and someone on the board. This has brought excitement to both places. We are so happy to have this opportunity to collaborate again to create an innovative and exciting opportunity for kids. I think that's what I was put on the board to do. We're always told, look outside the box. Education is changing. Funding, you know, is hard. And so we're always trying to look for ways to work together. And you have an opportunity now to support this pilot project for 5 years. You will never have an opportunity to work with an administration like ours. You've met our superintendent today. She's wonderful. The people from Lila, we have worked with them for years. They're wonderful. They're very collaborative thinking. They're always looking outside the box, looking out for the children first, always looking for ways to offer more opportunities. And I think if you allow this, it's kind of odd that we have to come and ask for permission to do good things that we think will be good for our district. But that's the way it is, and that's the way it should be, I guess. So we're just asking you to please give us the confidence to try this for 5 years. And I think you're going to see, and you heard now just a minute ago, it could be a cost savings. I think you're going to see that this is an opportunity that could grow all over Minnesota. And just think, you'd be helping us be the first. We like being first in Minnesota, especially if it saves money. I've been watching all of you on Channel 15 at my house. That's the cable station I get. And I think you're in need of some extra money. And this is a very positive, very innovative, very exciting opportunity for us to work together as a legislature and the school district, as a charter school and a public school. And I'm just excited to come here and tell you that 7 of us on the board, we're all very different people. We all think very differently about things, but we're united in this effort. We really want to go forward with this, and I think you will be very, very happy to be a part of it if you allow us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moorhead. Just a moment, please.
Sure.
We are all in always looking for ways to use taxpayer dollars more efficiently and more effectively. Before you leave, I have one question for
sure.
You. I'm wondering if you can visit with me a little bit about your authorizer, Volunteers of America, and what the status of your authorization is with them and when it is that they might need to reauthorize you. Can you kind of fill me in on that?
I'm going to have to address that with maybe the superintendent or Cam.
Looks like we have a volunteer.
We have a volunteer to answer that one.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hedlund.
Not exactly a volunteer.
If it was unclear, Karen is the part of the school board of the school district.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry about that.
Let
and
me
so
direct the question to you.
The authorizer would be with us, Lakes International Language Academy. And Volunteers of America, we actually just, I believe it was last year, they became our authorizer. We were one of the 10 that the state authorized before that. And so when we needed to find an authorizer, when the state no longer was authorizing, we feel very fortunate to have paired up with Volunteers of America. Do you have specific questions about that?
I'm just curious, are you in good standing with them? Have you received any notice that they plan not to continue? I just want to know the status of that.
Sure, Madam Chair. Our standing to this point is excellent. We have a request before them right now for grade expansion and for an additional site, in that we've outgrown our building. Whether we move together with Forest Lake or stay by ourselves, that they are considering. They have been part of this planning. They have some questions as to what we really are during this 5 years. We've tried to clarify that today. We've made several changes. A couple of them at their request. Haven't heard from them since those changes, so I don't know if they're here and want to speak to that themselves, but we feel we're in very good standing with them and have had their support on everything we've done to this point.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Could you ask if there is somebody from Volunteers of America who might come and address that?
Absolutely. Is there any other comments or questions for Mr. Hedlund while he's here?
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, Senator Olson.
Mr. Hedlund, a confession to all, I've known Mr. Hedlund since he was about knee-high to a grasshopper. I haven't seen you in
a long time ago now.
And I had to verify that you were the Cameron Hedlund that was, I think, the youngin' of the Hedlund family, and it's good to see you again, that you're involved in a very fruitful career and one that aligns with a lot of things that we value here. So congratulations, and hope all continues to go well.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from Volunteers of America that would like to testify in regards to this bill? All right. Are there any other testifiers in favor of the bill? I think we have some other testifiers as well then. Gene Piccolo. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Piccolo.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. First, the Association of Charter Schools commends the cooperative program that Lakes International Language Academy and Forest Lake School have implemented to align and articulate their Spanish immersion program. In fact, they were recognized this past summer on a national basis for their cooperative efforts. Second, the association supports cooperative action between charter schools and school districts and would support a change in the law to allow for joint powers agreements or the conversion of charter schools to district schools, which are not currently allowed under Minnesota statutes. Third, while we commend the charter school and the district and support amending the law, we have significant concerns about this bill for the following reasons. First, it really undermines the concept of charter schools as stated in charter school law that was adopted by this legislature 20 years ago next month. Second, it undermines the role and responsibility of authorizers because some are kind of in limbo over that five-year period. I think you raised an interesting question, Madam Chair, in your question about the length of the charter. Up under current law, charters can only be up to a maximum of 5 years. And the question is the 5 years being renewed this year, or was it last year? So there could be a timing problem here where they would run out of an authorizer in the middle of this process. Second, if the charter school students are district students, then the charter no longer exists because a charter school must have students, it must have employees, and it must have a board that operates as a nonprofit board. This bill would make it basically an advisory board. Fourth, it would allow the school district, as was mentioned earlier, to collect lease aid for students that are no longer charter school students. As was also mentioned earlier, Forest Lake counts these students for the referendum to begin with. So they are getting funding for these students under referendum, but are not none of that money goes currently to LELA for those students. So there is already excess money in the system for students from LELA. So basically, the framework that the school seeks to become a basically a self-governing school under the traditional school district. And while we would hate to see Lakes International leave the ranks as charter schools, we would not be opposed to a conversion process for charter schools that wish to do that, wish to become a self-governing school under the self-governing school law, or a district who would like to have a provision for a conversion process. However, with this, there are too many vague things in this proposal. One of the things that we have pointed out and have had discussions with is we're not clear what the purpose of this is. And we believe there should be a purpose in law for any kind of thing. It was mentioned the other day that they don't know where this all might lead. Well, 20 years ago, the law was passed to create charter schools. And there were six purposes. And nobody knew where this would all go, but at least there were some defined purposes, because at the end of this 5 years, the legislation calls for an evaluation. And if you're going to evaluate, you have to have some point of reference to begin with. And so there needs to be some purposes, we believe, to evaluate at the end of the process. So again, we have some concerns about this. We would support legislation to allow joint powers agreements, which we see as a natural extension of cooperation, because charter schools are not allowed currently to enter into joint powers agreements because they're nonprofit organizations, and joint power agreements are between government entities or a conversion process for schools that wish to become part of a school district. Thank you.
Mr. Piccolo, I'm not aware of any potential legislation at this point regarding a joint powers agreement or an option for conversion. Are you aware of any such potential legislation here in Minnesota at this time?
Madam Chair, no. But we would support that, and we would work with the legislature to put that in place because there are other charter schools who would like to do joint agreements with school districts. We have a school in Minneapolis that would like to do a joint powers agreement around basic adult education and GED. So there is a need for a joint powers, some kind of way of doing that.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Piccolo? Thank you, Mr. Piccolo.
Thank you.
Is Dr. Joe Nathan in the room? Welcome, Dr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Nathan. I direct the Center for School Change at the McAllister College. I've been an inner-city public school teacher and administrator. I'm not employed by any of the parties involved in this. My testimony should not be viewed as representative of McAllister College or any other entity. As some of you know, I've been involved in trying to help improve public schools in this state for more than a quarter of a century. I've been a teacher and administrator and done a variety of other things, including working for the National Governors Association. I did, as some of you know, become involved with the Cincinnati Public Schools, where we were able to increase overall graduation rates by more than 25 points and eliminate, not just reduce, but eliminate the graduation gap between white and African American kids. It's one of the few American cities where that has happened. And since we left Cincinnati several years ago, the graduation rates have continued to increase. I want to make 5 points about this. First, I share Mr. Piccolo's admiration for innovation. We've done a number of things over the last 15 years to bring together district and charter public schools. We've held workshops. We produce publications. We are very interested in the exchange of ideas back between district and charter schools and in collaborative projects. So I completely agree that collaboration can be very, very useful. Secondly, I agree with Mr. Piccolo about the value of a potential joint powers agreement. Third, I agree with Mr. Piccolo and, indeed, have talked with the representative, state representative and member of the House about the idea of allowing a charter to convert to a district school. We right now allow a district school to convert to a charter. It certainly makes sense to allow a charter to convert to a district, and have made that offer to help write such language. In fact, was contacted by the assistant director of the of LILA less than 24 hours after this was heard in the House last week, and offered and was asked to testify in favor of that legislation, which, as you know, was put on the table, I believe, The legislative chair is in the room to talk potentially with you about why they decided to do that. So I think collaboration is valuable. I think revisions of law can be valuable. I think that we should expand the opportunity for the movement between district and charter. We already have the opportunity for people to move from district to charter. We ought to allow charter to move to district and try that out. Having said that, I have three concerns. And in the last 4 hours, I've been in two different schools, talked with two different directors of schools, one a district and one a charter, and they both said, yeah. So here are my three concerns. First, where is the accountability for results of the kind that the legislative auditor talked about with you and that you 2 years ago, as members of the legislature in many respects, decided had to be increased for charter public schools? You'll recall that the legislative auditor spent a year examining the authorizer function, the function of reviewing, of monitoring charters, and found many, many problems. And the legislature, I think, in its wisdom, and many of us, including Mr. Pickle and myself, strongly agreed with the legislative auditor and said we need to have strong authorizers. Well, there's nothing in here about this school district becoming an authorizer. Now, when I've talked with officials back and forth, one of them will say, well, we don't want to do it, and they don't want to do it. But the reality is that you have said to every charter public school in this state, you may not continue to exist unless you have an approved authorizer. And you have spent a lot of time and a lot of money saying to the State Department of Education and saying to authorizers, before you are allowed to supervise a school, you must go through a very extensive process and demonstrate to the State Department of Education that you know what you're doing. Well, there's no such requirement in this bill. So the kind of concerns that the legislative auditor raised about people who are going to supervise charter schools is absent from this. There is no required training for the school district. They are not in this bill agreeing to become an authorizer. And one hears messages back and forth. I received an email less than 4 hours ago from a district official who said that the charter really doesn't want us to be an authorizer. Well, that may very well be. But it seems to me that as representatives of the public, you want a school that's going to be receiving charter school funds, i.e. lease aid, you want them to follow the same rules, don't you? Don't you want to say to all the charter public schools in the state of Minnesota, you have to have an approved authorizer? Secondly, you have said, and I think quite wisely, we want to avoid conflicts of interest. The charter public schools cannot buy services from their authorizer for very good reasons. You don't want to set up a conflict of interest where the authorizer has a financial incentive to keep the school going. Well, there's no such conflict of interest provisions in here. So these people would be allowed to charge the charter school for various services, provide various services, would receive funds from the state for these students, would count these students. There is a disincentive rather than an incentive to perform the kind of rigorous, challenging scrutiny that you referred to, recommended by the legislative auditor, have asked for. So it seems to me that you are saying, if you adopt this, and I hope that you don't, you would be saying all the charter public schools in the state have to have an authorizer that's been approved by the State Department of Education, except this one. You would be saying to all the school districts in the state, if you want to supervise a charter public school, you have to have your method of reviewing the school, you have to have that approved by the state, except for this school district. Furthermore, you would be saying to all the charter public schools in the state, you cannot get both local property taxes and lease aid, except for this school. It seems to me this sets up a rather significant challenge to this legislation. If you are saying to more than 140 charters in this state, you have to have an approved authorizer, you can't get local property taxes, and the reason you can't get local property is we're giving you the lease aid instead, and then you're saying, but we're going to make exception for this school. Finally, what is the accountability mechanism? The accountability mechanism, which, by the way, some of us talked with these folks about just last week, after volunteering, by the way, to help draft this legislation in January, and those offers were ignored. But the accountability mechanism is very unclear. There is going to be a discussion between the school district and the authorizer. Well, what happens if the school district and the authorizer disagree? This is precisely the kind of situation that the legislative auditor raised concerns with you about. You asked the legislative auditor to look into the situation with charter schools. They made recommendations. You listened carefully to them, and you said, that's right. We want to have anybody who is reviewing a charter go through a rigorous process from the State Department of Education. But if you approve this the way it's written, you would be saying to all the authorizers, literally dozens of authorizers that have applied to the State Department of Education, before you can supervise a charter, you have to satisfy the State Department of Education that you really know how to do this. You would be saying that to all the authorizers, other school districts, social service agencies, colleges and universities. You would be saying that except Forest Lake. Forest Lake doesn't have to do that. You would be saying to all the other charter public schools, you have to go through a process of applying to an approved authorizer except this particular school. Seems to me that those are very serious exceptions. So while I'm a huge fan of collaboration, while I'm a huge fan of innovation, while Senator Olson and I have, among others, worked for more than a quarter century on things like post-secondary options and open enrollment and other things that were very controversial, everything that's new isn't better. We need to preserve accountability for results. We need to preserve accountability to the taxpayers, and that is precisely why you adopted the legislative auditor recommendations. It seems to me that those legislative auditor recommendations are entirely inconsistent with this as written. It seems to me that Mr. Piccolo has presented excellent suggestions, and I would recommend that those be considered.
Thank you, Dr. Nathan. Any comments from the committee?
Questions?
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, question for Dr. Nathan. Dr. Nathan, doesn't it not also seem possible that the Forest Lake superintendent would have an accountability relationship? I mean, that is how I heard this, that in fact we were assuming that just like the superintendent is responsible for the academic outcomes of the students of Forest Lake, that it seemed to me an extension of that relationship, almost like an authorizer. And so I was actually wondering what really is the difference in this case between an authorizer and the role of Forest Lake. And that's why I kind of zeroed in on the financial arrangement, because it seemed to me the difference was this new pilot would have access to the property tax dollars, which a traditional charter school would not, or have access to the regular funding formula.
Dr.
Why do you not think that the superintendent would have that role?
Dr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Senator, the legislative auditor recommended that before any entity, whether it's a school district or a social service agency or another organization, would be allowed to authorize, supervise a school, they would need to satisfy the State Department of Education that they know how to do it. This legislation doesn't call for that.
Well, Madam
Chair.
Senator
Bonoff.
Dr. Nathan, they obviously know how to do that because they're running a school district.
Dr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Senator, having been an urban public school teacher and administrator, there's a considerable difference between running a school district and having an explicit written contract for results, which is part of what a charter public school is supposed to have. This doesn't call for a written contract. It says that the Commissioner of Education, quote, must evaluate the effectiveness of the pilot project in improving student outcomes. By how much? We're working with the National Governors Association, the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. And by the way, in the House, there was a representative of the National Association of Charter School Authorizers who testified against this because he said the Minnesota law requiring authorizers to be approved by the State Department is viewed as a national model. This does not call for that kind of training. This does not call for that kind of scrutiny by the State Department of the school district.
Neither. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Dr. Nathan, we have another model in the site-governed schools. How would that work in this situation? Could you address that? Because I know you're very familiar with it as well.
Dr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's another option. And although I've been given less than 24 hours on two different occasions to respond, both last week and then yesterday afternoon, to representatives first of the charter and secondly of the school district. In both conversations, that's one of the things that I suggested. A site-governed school model would certainly allow these people to collect property taxes. It would allow them to have autonomy. It would allow them to do a number of things. There is a provision that that would need to be added that would require a charter to convert to a site-governed school. But that seems to me to be a sentence or two that could easily be written. So if it is the legislative desire to allow this school to convert to site-governed school, I think that that would be an excellent way to proceed.
Thank you.
Any further comments? Any further testifiers against or for this bill? Yes, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I usually don't wade in on issues that pertain to individual members of the organization, but I think two things need to be pointed out here. We're hearing testimony that this somehow is going to totally upset the apple cart, and if you look closely at the bill, there is no statute changes in this bill. This is chapter law. It's a pilot project. It's two entities looking to work together to see if it works. I agree with Mr. Nason and Mr. Piccolo. Let's throw in some language about evaluation. I think the district and the charter will go along with this. But this does not change how other entities will work. This will not throw out authorizers. This is an experiment looking at one district and one charter school, and can they work together? Can the sum be greater than the, you know, can the part, sum be greater, can the whole be greater than the sum of the parts? I knew I'd get to it. For those of you who don't know me, I've been around here since charters were started as well. And I think that the long history of charters is showing it to be an ongoing and growing and evolving system. This is just another way to look at it. Both parties can pull out if they want to. There's going to probably need to be some clarification there as to, you know, when's and the hows. But I don't think anyone here would shy away from the valuation. Nothing is going to happen to other districts. If other districts and charter schools seeking to do this would have to come in and get an enabling language to have this done. If this pilot project goes in place, it only goes in place for this particular situation. There are no additional districts and charter schools mentioned in this pilot project. So I think that needs to be made clear here. There seems to be a lot of rumbling about something falling down that isn't falling down. So I really want to, you know, that's my two cents.
Any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, I'll just mention, in looking over the fiscal note, two slight permutations. The costs that are in the fiscal note are assumed a 90-10 payment schedule, so the savings in fiscal 12 would be more like 110. And that's one piece. And then the second piece is it appears that the property tax recognition shift was not accounted for in the fiscal note, so that would generate an additional savings of $55,000 in fiscal 12. So the net would be about $160,000 in fiscal 12, ongoing through 13 at about $156,000.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Relative to the Senate bill.
Any other comments? I have one question, and Senator Vandeveer, you might choose who might want to answer this, but we've heard three options today: the joint powers agreement, the conversion to public schools, or the site-governed school model. And knowing that this may be of we may want these type of options for other charter schools too. My question to the folks from LELA and the Forest Lake School District would be if either of these three options, which would be broad enough then to account for other charter schools that might be in the same situation, would meet their goals, meet the needs.
Mr. Cairns was up here to comment on a few of the other statements, so I think he can answer this question also.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to answer a couple of questions. On your particular question, Madam Chair, or associate chair, co-chair,
vice chair.
We've looked at joint powers agreements over the years, and at the site governed law, again, We have a many-page letter from one of the best school district attorneys in the state, Paul Ratwick, which explains why the site-governed statute doesn't work in this case. And it largely has to do with the status of the employees and the way and the flexibility with inside the school when it becomes a partner with Forest Lake. I think joint powers could be an answer, but again, it's the same issue of can it be tailored enough to really fit the model they're trying to create. And since we don't know exactly what that model will look at a year or two into the project, it probably is premature to try to do it on a joint powers agreement. I don't have any problem eventually with joint powers. And I think actually charter schools are both a nonprofit corporation and a public entity. If you look at Subdivision 7 and other sections of the statute, charter schools are public school districts for most purposes. But there's always a question of whether all purposes. So that's my response there. On a couple of other questions, first of all, lines, and you delete all lines 1, 3, and 4 are your purpose. I don't understand the comment, there's no purpose stated as to what this is about. Secondly, if you look at lines 1, 20, 3, 4, and 5, this does contemplate a written contract between the district and the LILA to set out all of the issues of how functionality works on this and what day-to-day operations are about, and I think Senator Bonhoff is right on point. I find it somewhat astonishing that the suggestion is that the superintendent of Forest Lake and the school board doesn't know how to hold their schools accountable. I think that's a little preposterous. But more importantly, this contract, which is a core to this, is in fact a way to reflect the precision and details with which this project will be taken out. Thirdly, this is not a charter school during this period. The charter is suspended, so all the issues about accountability and like shift away from the charter model to the more traditional district model, and that's an attempt to see if we can do it somewhat differently. So we're trying to stay out of the charter model. The authorizer issue is really an irrelevant issue here because the charter is suspended and the authorizer role is not part of this effort. So we're shifting back to a traditional school district evaluation and accountability model, which we have, how many, 350-odd school districts for that, I think, is generally the way it's done. And here, this is an effort to see if the charter school can take how it's functioning away from the model and fit it within the district and see how it works. If it doesn't work, everybody steps back and we go back to the charter model. So we're not talking about an authorizer here, and the suggestion that somehow Forest Lake isn't competent to oversee a school in its own district seems to me to be inappropriate. So to remind you again, the purpose is stated. There's a contract to set out the details. Forest Lake oversees and is held accountable for the outcomes. And if they don't like what the school is doing, they're going to step away from the project, and we go back to the charter. So it's a way of getting us some time to see if we can do it a little bit differently. And on top of that, and I would say to you this was somewhat inadvertent, we end up saving money. I mean, that wasn't the reason we wrote all this stuff in the first place. It had to do with the functionality and the education of the kids. Coincidentally, we end up saving you money, so that's even better.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the committee? Ms. Alzweiger, would you like to testify?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzweiger, Education Minnesota, and I will be extremely brief. As currently written, and we're just seeing the delete everything officially today for the first time, it hasn't been analyzed completely, and this is a complex bill, actually. But I would say that right now we oppose the language as it is written. However, we have spoken to some of the proponents, and we think that some of the changes that they have made, we think, are some good changes. On line 2.1 to 2.2, the language that I think that they have written is not exactly what they're intending, and so in conversations with them, there might be some ways to fix some of that language. But I don't know that we could come to an agreement to say that we would officially support it. Right now, the way it is, we can't, but we're certainly willing to talk to the proponents to see if there is a possibility.
Ms. Alzweiger, our plan today is to lay this on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, so that I think would give time for all parties to work together.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments? Okay. With that, we'll lay the bill over for Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. First, I may be creating a new name moniker here, but I'm going to make a motion, which I call the Frederickson motion. On line 2.15, Danny Frederickson, for those of you that served with Senator Frederickson, would look for any time there was the word such that seemed to be extraneous and get it out of there. So I'll move to strike the word such on line 2.15. It seems to be extraneous.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, you beat me to it, but I think you could take off out on any such June 30th. I mean, if we follow ahead of it, it just continues on. That expression is redundant, but there's some more work that needs to be in language.
Senator Nienau, do you accept that as a friendly amendment to your amendment?
If you want to change that, that's fine. Yeah, we can incorporate that, yeah.
All right, so read it for the record, please. What line and such? Did you really want to strike language?
I'll withdraw my amendment and let Senator Olson do hers.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, on line 2.15, delete on any such June 30th.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, the amendment is adopted.
And then, Madam Chair, I did have a question.
Senator Nienau.
And since we're going to lay this over, Senator Vandeveer, I'll just pose this question to the other interested parties for consideration. And I don't know if this is a concern or not. It just is a question that I had. The contract, program would run through the 2017 school year. And there's a provision here related to the wording we just struck where either party can withdraw from this agreement or this contract by notification no later than March 1st in the school year. If that happens, this language then would have LELA revert back to its status, and the authorizer and the status would be reinstated for the next two consecutive school years. My question is there the potential there to, for lack of a better word, game the system if they were planning at the end of the 5 years to go back anyway, but if they make this maneuver by March 1st, they automatically get a two-year extension. Can they get around some procedures that way? And if so, is there some language that needs to be cleared up in that? We don't need to address that right now, but that's just something to think about.
Thank you, Senator Nienau. Any other comments? Okay, members will be laying this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. I would suggest that all parties work together. Certainly there's a great interest here, and look for some common language.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Oh,
excuse me. Well, that's all right.
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I know there's another bill and another model. I think Senator Torres-Ray is introducing that deals with districts and charters, and I think we do need to look at this in a context, because I think there's some very real challenges are presented by this one in particular, and I don't know how it relates to. I haven't looked at detail the other proposal that would be coming before us, but I think we need to get a handle on the understanding of the structures that we now have in place, and that we don't undo or have some unintended consequences with the actions we take here. So it does need some more work. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Senator
Vandeveer.
Next on the agenda, Senate File 946, Senator DeCry.
Senator DeCryf is presenting Senate File 946. I understand you have an amendment. You want to offer that as an author's amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would. It's an A4 amendment.
Has that been distributed? See that it's out?
Madam Chair, I think with this,
you wish to, Senator DeCryf, do you wish to describe your amendment as it's being handed out?
Would it be okay, Madam Chair, if I would basically do an introduction and then just move into what it? What it basically does is just puts the bill in the shape that we were looking for it to be in.
Certainly, certainly. Senator DeKreif moves the A4 amendment to Senate File 946. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 946 is a school joint partnership bill, and it's related to innovation in our education system. Some would say Minnesota has the best education system in the world, but we suffer with one of the highest achievement gaps in the country today. Some would say our education is cutting edge, but we still know that our third graders, a lot of our third graders have not been taught how to read at their grade level. I have listened during our time on the Education Committee to some of the brightest superintendents, principals, teachers, leading organizations, and think tanks about best practices and cutting-edge ideas in education today. But if there's something that I've learned from my years of experience in the business world, it is this. If you want to get something done, first make sure you have the right people hired to get that job done. Then, rather than micromanage the process, let them know what you want them to accomplish. At that point, take a step back and let them accomplish the task and be amazed at the ingenuity that is used to accomplish that task. I offer one of my beliefs. Those of us working at the Capitol in this great state of Minnesota do not have all the best ideas. I believe those in the classrooms, in the administrative offices, and the local school boards have many of the ideas that we are in search of. I ask that we give our leaders in the field a chance to amaze us with what they can accomplish if we only allow them. This bill will establish 6 individual pilot projects across Minnesota, with 3 or more school districts in each. The state will lift many of the rules and regulations we place upon school districts. My hope is that participating districts and their administrations will collaborate with teachers, parents, and school boards to come up with the new ideas that we have never allowed them to work on in the past. This is new territory. This is breaking new ground. This is Minnesota in search of innovation. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to have Mr. Charlie Kite maybe introduce and tell more about the bill.
Mr. Kite.
Senator Olson, members of the committee.
Put your name in
there
for the
record. Give a kind of an overview of what we're thinking about, and then
Mr. Kite, give your name and connection for the record.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yep.
Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director. I'm starting to forget who I am. The executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I represent many of the school superintendents in the state.
Thank you.
In fact, I wrote down the other day ex-director, and some of my colleagues back here chided me because they thought I was jumping the gun on retirement. Mm-hmm. But so be it. We have discussions going on all over the state amongst school leaders about how they can change the way that they would deliver instruction for students. We don't know how all of this will come out. We know there's a lot of discussion going on. I'll give you a couple of quick examples. Then we have Superintendent Jay Haugen here to talk about some of the work they're doing in the metro area. But as an example, up in the Brainerd, Wadena, kind of central Minnesota area, they're looking at a project to really do student-driven instruction where the community and the schools would really view the students as their customers and really try to create a plan for each student, different than they're delivering education now. On the Iron Range or northeastern Minnesota, they're looking at seriously bringing the technical colleges and the high schools together to do some joint delivery of programming. And I could go on and tell you about a whole bunch of these things. But what we recognized, first of all, is that a single district has a very difficult time creating significant change because there's all the talk in the district and around, well, we can't do it different because nobody else is doing it different. Therefore, we have to sort of stay sort of in the mold and keep it together. We found that when we get multiple districts to cooperate and collaborate, they can start to break out of the box. So this bill essentially says, turn us loose. We'll, in a responsible way, try to start changing the way we're delivering instruction. There isn't a cost involved to the state. There's more a removal of the hundreds of different rules and regs that we'd have to try to jump over that kind of almost stops us in our tracks before we get started. I'd ask Superintendent Jay Haugen to give a little briefing on some of the work that's starting to happen right here in the metropolitan area. Jay?
Well, thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jay Haugen. I'm Superintendent of Schools currently with the West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan area schools. I believe the reason I was asked to come here today, of a choice of many, many fine superintendents, is that I've been known as an innovator for kind of a long time. 10 years before I was in the metro area, I was outstate, Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, for 10 years as their superintendent. And before that time, I worked for 7 years in southwest Minnesota, helping develop a collaborative that got seven small school districts to be able to work together on their curriculum and their staff development and all those things that they coveted or were never able to do on their own. We get banded together to do that. And also put together a 9-school district telemedia group that provided coursework shared among all 9 schools, and that was really something to put together as well. So I bring that kind of collaboration for innovation idea in really everything I do. You know, I and many of my colleagues have known for a very long time that our school systems, that we need to work together and we need to change. We need to redesign, change the way teaching and learning happens. And as Charlie said, to accomplish that, we do need to work together. Some specific things we certainly need to do is we must move away from the factory model of education and understand that every child brings their own unique strengths and weaknesses and talents, things that they have of worth to the world. If we find those things in children, you know, much of our job is done, and they're motivated and they're learning. So we need to find ways to personalize and individualize education for every child, which often means we need to deploy our staff and work very differently and have our schools look very different than they do today. We need to use technology very different. There are some very powerful ways that we can use technology as a content delivery system that frees teachers up so they have more time to work individually with students and with students in small groups. And we need to make changes that, again, change the way we fundamentally look. We also know as school districts that we can't be everything to everybody. Every school cannot provide every service to every single child, and we need to that's a very expensive model. So we need to collaborate, because together we can be everything to everybody. So with all these people working so hard together, with so much knowledge and so much planning and so much effort and such a desire for things to get better, why don't we ever seem to meet that promise? Why do we still have such an achievement gap? Why do we have so many children so unengaged in school? A couple things. Time and time again, as I've tried to collaborate and work through complete redesigns of our schools and our delivery system. First, we spend more time with creativity and energy and resources to get around the rules and regulations that are in place to put in a new design than we do on the design itself. That makes for a very slow change model. And second, something that I know Charlie mentioned as well, it is really hard to be that person to stick your neck up. When you redesign and you're enough different than the schools around you, your people in your community see that, and it's very, very difficult for them. They want to know who else is doing that, because you need to have leaders. You need to have a vanguard. You need to have someone leading the way. And so we believe that together, the only way to do that is together as school districts, because you do end up with a school here or there that breaks the mold. And we all know those schools that knock the socks off of achievement. But you also know that those things often then don't get transferred to other schools. It's the school next door is doing no better than it ever did. So what we have to do is find a way to encourage the whole system of schools to be better. And I think that's where the power is in change, and that's how we're going to get over this hump to the point where we really can say our whole system of school is better and significantly better. So here's what we've done, and the real reason I think they asked me here today. A group of superintendents have come to this understanding. We need to do this together. That's the only way we can. And so this year, I can tell you that group of superintendents of the metro area spent more time together than we spent with our own leadership teams. We spent 48 hours at one stretch together, barely sleeping over our winter break, to come up with things that we could do together to change. Because it's not change around the edges. It's not change the way we provide, you know, just finance services or HR services. How do we work together on our core of what we do, where we spend the vast amount of our dollars? And so just in that amount of time, we've come up a way to share and put programs such as AVID in all of our schools, which we didn't have before, and without going into it, it's a great research-based way to get students motivated to learn, to start thinking of college as a real option. And we can do that in all of our schools for way less than half by working together than if we had done them each on our own. We have a kindergarten jumpstart program, three different sites this summer for about 10 school districts where we're going to take the neediest kids. And again, a program that we'd all wanted to do, but we weren't able to do until we collaborated. We're going to work more with Concordia Language Camp and the kind of a program that's kind of exciting. We're putting together a principal academy because in the end it comes down often to the real strength of your principals. And we need to have a bigger effort than just, I think what each of us can do separately. And we also have a shared curriculum development program. So we've come up with all those things, and we're really excited about collaboration. But the one thing I want you to notice is that in other collaborations I've been part of, every one of those things is something new. You know, that's what we do when we collaborate. We come up with new things. And how much can we keep adding new things? In the end, we need to collaborate about the core of our business and what we do. We need to change the way that we provide education to our students in fundamental ways. And we think to do that, we need a cleaner slate to do that. And I think that's really what this bill provides, is the opportunity for a group of schools to come together to have a much cleaner slate and to collaborate and work together on the core of what we do so that we can together change outcomes for students. And ultimately, you know, we know we're not looking at a lot of additional resources in the upcoming years. But we do believe, through our work together, that we can provide an education that brings every child to their full potential with the resources we currently have if we're allowed to collaborate in this way.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Kreif, for bringing the idea. And perhaps Mr. Keiter, Mr. Haugen might be able to answer this. I'm looking at the bill. I'm also looking at the fiscal note. It has a small cost to administer applications and stuff. I don't know how realistic that is, but I'm not going to argue about the fiscal note particularly. But they make a point in the assumptions where they talk about the statement on lines 2.8 to 2.10 of your bill, notwithstanding any law of the contrary, the commission may allow the member districts to, in a joint partnership, to operate as though they were charter schools. And I think that the fiscal note makes an interesting point in that it may need some clarification about what the intention is with that statement. Charter schools do not have publicly elected boards. Does that mean that these districts no longer have to have a publicly elected board? Or could they decide they don't want a board? They don't qualify for revenue if there's a required levy. The paragraph underneath that says charter schools do not have to do collective bargaining, and they're relieved of some of the fund balance restrictions. And their point is the effect of school districts choosing laws and with which they will not comply may have some unintended or unanticipated or unknown costs or savings, which may in itself not be a huge problem. But they also point out that there's nothing that prohibits a district or a group of districts to do the things this bill contemplates under current law. So I'm reading all that, and I'm thinking, well, the key is that phrase about that they can act as charter schools, and that must anticipate something that current law doesn't provide. So I'm just wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about what you intend to do here that you can't do under current law. It is provided for under the language of the charter schools, acting like a charter school.
Who wants to tackle that? Mr. Kite.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I always ask the hard questions. it might best be best to just very quickly run through what the amendment says, because we were trying to address some of that in this amendment. And in the amendment, there's really four pieces. The very first part on kind of lines 1.2.3 says, let these groups grow. If you get a group of schools that wants to create an innovation, it's a good idea, let more people come into it. That's pretty simple. The second one down on roughly lines 1.8, 1.9 is what we tried to say is, let us have essentially the same flexibility as the charter schools have, but in that, recognize that you never gave charter schools absolute total freedom. There are federal laws and some state laws that still have to be maintained, so it's kind of giving us more or less that platform. In the third part under E, I think it's on 1.12, 1.14, it says, but don't change the funding. Let the public schools that are doing this still have the same funding that they have as charter schools. And then the last part under F, 1.15. Oh, I'm sorry, as public schools. My mistake. And under 1.1517 in that area of F, it's still have these schools governed in the traditional way, elected school boards. We're not asking that that all goes away. So that's kind of what the amendment says. To your specific question, I'm not sure. And the reason for that is people would say to us, well, what exact innovations are you talking about? When you say the word innovation, it kind of means that you don't know what you're talking about. You turn people loose. If you go to Medtronic and say to their scientists, innovate, they don't first say, well, you can only innovate and it's got to come out exactly this way, and you got to kind of follow or not follow these rules. They say innovate, and then you turn them loose. So what we're asking is that you kind of turn us loose. And we will make every attempt to act responsibly, but we're also trying to wash through hundreds of, many times, very small regulations and details, sometimes some bigger ones.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kite. I think that clarifies a little bit. I'm just wondering if this language is broad enough to accomplish the purpose you've just articulated. It may be that we need to contemplate relieving the school districts who participate in such a program of all mandates and statutes other than ones that pertain maybe to health and safety or something. But is this broad enough to accomplish the goal that you hope to see happen of freeing up the systems to be innovative?
Would Superintendent Hogan like to have a whack at that one?
Well, certainly, you know, Senator Hahn, Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Senator Hahn. Yeah. Senator Hahn. Thank you. Thank you for that. Sorry.
Oh, Charlie, too.
You know, a little bit when I hear the question about, you know, first, you know, what of this could we do already? You know, to me, I'm kind of a proof is in the pudding, you know, sort of thing. And you just look around. Walk in every school district, what do you see? If it really was able to do it, with so many people really wanting it to happen and building their life on changing things, I think you would see it. And so it's really, I think, as far as systems goes, no. You know, there are too many things that need to be solved, too many hurdles you have to get over that makes it too big to even move one or two things ahead, much less, you know, big systems change. As far as the idea, does this go far enough? I think I follow Charlie. I don't know. Because I know me personally, we are going to do any change very, you know, kind of humanely, thinking of students, thinking about staff, thinking about our communities. We're not going to run roughshod over anything. We're going to bring everyone along with us. So as open as we possibly can be, certainly gives us more opportunity to make those decisions. I'm already have in my head under this language thinking, well, okay, but now I wonder if they're going to ask if I'm going to be able to also ask for waivers, you know, because there may be things about courses and, you know, and the requirements and the things that, what's a 21st century skill? What should students really know and learn and spend time on? There may be some other things that I'm thinking, you know, to really provide the best education, have children ready for the global society, instant access to communications, the world we have, I maybe need to focus more on one thing than something else. And I'm not sure that our system or even this would allow that. So there may be some other things I'd like. But.
And Madam Chair, just one comment. I'm a big waiver guy. You may know that. And,
some bills then.
So I certainly would be more than happy to see you apply for a waiver from the Minnesota Department. But I think to the extent that we can do some things to create the climate to allow you and others like you to do what you think is right. We had a bill earlier that I brought that would have set aside all the rules, all the mandates, all the testing, and say focus on reading for the kids that can't read in the first three grades. And that really was an idea I learned got out of a collective bargaining discussion I had with a teacher who asked that question, why can't we do that, when I was on the school board in Eden Prairie.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what would happen if some school did that. And I don't know if this language would permit that. If it doesn't, I would then say, gee, I wish it was a little more expansive to allow that. Or maybe we should put a little waiver in there to let you do that. But I think that you're right. I think you've got to find a way to create a condition where people who are there, teachers, administrators, others, and say, gee, if you didn't have to look over your shoulder and see what the legislature and the department is asking, what would you do? And it might look a lot different than what we have. And I just want to encourage you to keep thinking along those lines. And if you have thoughts on that, bring them back and tell us what we should do differently to give you the freedom to do what you want to do.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Madam Chair, I don't know that I procedures here, whether you really want me to follow up, but there is one thing that you said, Senator, that was so important. Partly for me, it is working out a way to free up my teachers. Because the great stuff that goes on in my district does not depend on the few decisions I make or the few decisions the principal makes. It is the hundreds and the thousands of decisions that our teachers make every single day that makes all the difference. So that's what I'm after, is a system that allows their capacity to create and design and recreate their work and the way they collaborate and the way they provide service to students.
So, Superintendent Haugen, I'm just trying to function through here. You know, we think in the box that we're now in. Do you envision, say you have a number of school districts, each one would still continue under their own regular school board with the same administrative structure? Are you, what you're asking waivers from, or... To be not required to pursue more flexibility in terms of licensure or administrative roles? Do you see any, with Senator Bonhoff here, sitting here thinking shared services, might something come out of that would find more efficient ways to save some money and redirect it into other things within the larger district? Or does the district boundaries itself become a barrier to making some of those kinds of decisions?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as far as the school boards, I think that certainly was even in the amendment. I think keeping them as discrete school districts with school boards at this time is important. But yes, absolutely, especially when you think about the administrative structure. You know, I think when we think of this almost kind of as a super district or super innovation zone or whatever you want, I think definitely I think we would start blending kind of our administrative structure, but in some ways more the heart of our administrative structure. You know, right now we tend to look again at what can we do. We happen to provide for a neighboring school district HR services, for instance. Well, this is how can you, the teaching and learning process, I mean, how do you really get, can you share all of those services and assessment, and how can you really start sharing and developing curriculum? I have some teachers, you know, I have a physics teacher that is putting together things that just make you cry when you see the stuff that he sends home in tears of joy, because he's sending stuff home with kids every day that all teachers in the area, you know, should do. And we should be able to share those things, and we do try to share those things. But I think this is the kind of thing that could allow that to happen, you know, much more readily.
Great. Senator Bonhoff, you had a...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator DeCraft, you wanted to respond here. Maybe I should let you go first, Senator Bonhoff.
Sure.
We'll get you.
Yeah, if I could just a minute. Thank you, Madam Chair. Number one, I want to say, Senator Han, I really like the way you think. You know, something that I have a little bit of a concern about is this is only 4 years, and there's a part of me that would like it to be longer, but I think after 4 years for a pilot project, I think it's time then to really take a look and reevaluate and see what worked, what didn't work. Maybe the same thing in two different districts, one worked and one didn't. Let's find that out, and then let's change education in Minnesota. What I did is I slowed this process down when I saw this bill. And I did it because I wanted to poll my superintendents. That's in part why it didn't have a chance to be heard before the omnibus bill, because I wanted to really find out what my superintendents were going to say. I'd like to just share with you a couple of comments here. From one superintendent, on the surface, this appears to be an avenue for implementation of innovative programming. I do believe partnering and sharing can allow the introduction of curriculum and programming otherwise not available. I am concerned about the logistics of three or more districts collaborating, but would be willing at this point to at least continue to explore how to make its benefits for our students and this is Sibley County East communities. Another one, yes, I support this bill. I believe school districts need to look at possible opportunities to do their business differently and hopefully more efficiently. Any incentive to get districts to start looking at these options is a good thing. And the last one is, as I am learning more about this bill and understanding of this bill, I am highly supportive. I will be contacting Senator DeCraft to discuss and express this more in person, and he has. So I've gotten almost overwhelming support from my superintendents on this bill. They're anxious to see this thing move forward.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Kreif, you know, I'm a co-author, as is Senator Torres-Wright, so it is a bipartisan bill. And I really like this approach because, as Senator Olson said, I have been working for several years trying to bring forward something that would, in fact, allow for this. But what's different about this is, number one, you're bringing it forward, so it's coming from, you know, your group up, which is always works a little better. And also, as you mentioned, it's not just dealing with the administrative. It's which really, let's say you do all the savings there, you're still only talking about 20% of the overall budget. And so if you have a 20% savings on 20%, it's not really very much. You're saying, let's take the whole thing and look at it. Let's take teaching and learning. Let's take curriculum. Let's see who's got strengths in this area, and maybe they can provide this. And maybe, you know, you're strong in STEM, and so you could be the supplier of that. And, you know, just really opening it all up. And I would also encourage you to, at the same time you're looking at the meat of it, and you said you would, but again, to look at the administrative side too, because I think there is room to do regional administrative services in a pretty easy way. Yep. So I thank you, Senator Croy, for bringing this forward. And Superintendent, you are inspiring, and I look forward to watching as this goes forward. A couple other things. There was a group that worked during the interim to look at barriers to shared services. That was led by Representative Carol McFarlane, and she was working with Rebecca Otto. I don't have that report, but they did identify barriers. And then our Commission on Service Innovation that met, we identified after a six-month period that this approach was our number one priority. And so there is a lot of support and consensus around this whole thing. And then lastly, with regard to, is this language necessary to make this change? I think it is, because I think there's nothing in law that would prevent it. But what stops it from happening are these questions around governance. What happens to the board? What happens to my, you know, and so there's so much fear around this change that it doesn't really happen. And what you've laid out here is a path for to put some of that fear aside, to see we don't have to get rid of our board. We don't have to lose our autonomy. We can be a part of something and still be separate. And by putting language around that, I think you'll actually get more takers. So nice job.
Madam Chair, if I could just mention one thing. I want to apologize to my co-authors. because this is bipartisan, and Senator Bonoff, Torres Ray, Senator Nienau, and Senator Daley are co-authors on this, and I thank them for co-authoring this with me, and I do apologize for not mentioning that earlier.
Is there any further questions? Is there anybody else that would like to testify? Mr. Nathan?
We'll hold that against him.
You come to the table. Ms. Allswiger?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota, and Education Minnesota does oppose this bill. I think that the questions that Senator Han asked are very good questions. I'm very happy that we agree on this. I think the question you have to ask is, what is the purpose of the bill? What are you going to accomplish? I heard Mr. Kite say that in innovations, you don't know what you're going to talk about or what you're going to do. And I think that you might want to know that before you pass a law to allow something like this. There are a number of possibilities that school districts could enter into to create some innovation. There are joint powers agreements. They can form education districts. They can share some. There are other possibilities, all under 123A. So we would recommend that the school districts go to that first. After all, you need to know what the purpose is of what you're going to do. Look at 123A, and you might find a very good possibility. We certainly would oppose this bill. The main objection would be because I think there are a lot of questions to be answered, but also with the amendment, these individuals would be charter school employees. We are now making them, there is no collective bargaining required, but they are now at-will employees, no due process. How do you decide who these employees are going to be? Do they come from the regular district? Are they new employees? So now you have employees who would be performing the same function but would be treated differently than the employees in the existing member districts. So I think that this is, another one would be you wouldn't even have to have a licensed principal if you do have a principal in these buildings. So we think that there's a lot of work to be done before this language is even workable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Mr. Nathan?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to go back to some questions that Senator Olson and Senator Han asked. I apologize.
No, that's right.
Because I think you're right, and I have three specific suggestions. I support this, but I'd go further. We went from everybody having black telephones that looked pretty much the same to these kinds of things, because we questioned assumptions. And Senator Bonhoff has asked us to rethink. A number of you have asked us to rethink. So I think it's a good point that we ought to try to be explicit about what the goal is. Not surprisingly, I'd suggest increased student achievement, increased percentage of students fully prepared for some form of higher education, because as you know, we now have more than, we have 40% of our kids who are entering our public colleges and universities who have to take remedial courses, which is shocking in Minnesota. We are not doing as well in some areas as many other states, including South Dakota. So I think that the suggestion that the representative of Education Minnesota about being explicit about what we're trying to accomplish is excellent, but I do want to strongly reiterate, I'd go further. I would say to districts and charter public schools in Minnesota, you're right. Districts should not have to hire licensed administrators. We ought to see what happens. Some of the most effective charter public schools in this state, such as, for example, Harvest Prep, which has been recognized nationally, inner city school, high percentage of low-income kids, Higher Ground, recognized nationally by U.S. News and World Report. You heard testimony from them the last couple of years ago. Recognized by U.S. News and World Report, one of the most effective urban schools. run by a former city council member, first African-American to be elected to the city council chair in St. Paul. In any case, I think we ought to have greater freedoms. Plus, just to make the afternoon a little more interesting, I'd suggest that both district and charter schools be allowed to employ 25% of the people, as in some other states, who are not licensed teachers. I would give greater flexibility to both district and charter public schools, with the understanding that we need to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish and that we need to assess it. Because, with due respect to teachers and administrators in this state, some of whom are unquestionably very innovative, there are many people who want to go outside the bounds. And as has been suggested, there are examples of district teachers who are doing wonderful things. But I don't think we're going to get to this or other dramatic improvements in the kinds of products and services that we have if we continue to tie ourselves. So recently I met with a number of business leaders, and I met with a number of business leaders literally this morning, the head of the Minnesota Business Partnership and others, and I won't speak for them, but I will say I want to go beyond what's in this bill. I want to strongly encourage you, as you think about including this in the omnibus bill, to go beyond. And they may not use the freedoms that you give them, but I think they ought to be available. Finally, I want to congratulate you because I think this is one of the kinds of things that is happening because you have created a new dynamic in the state. So I think the congratulations are to the school educator, district educators that you heard, Mr. Kite, but also to the legislators, because this is exactly what we wanted to create, a dynamic where people are saying, we can rethink and we can do things differently. So it's congratulations to the educators, but also congratulations to the legislators. Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are working on getting another fairly well-known person in here that is very familiar with the whole disruptive innovation concept, but also with what's happening in technology and the implications of either working to blend, as I think your proposal does, and as Dr. Nathan supports us, or whether it's going to go around us and happen anyway. So hopefully before the end of the session, maybe within the next few weeks, we will have, I will not, until we have that commitment, I won't tell you who, but you will all benefit from it, and we hope that many will come to participate in that as well. Senator Kreif, I think at this point we'll lay this on the table. It doesn't mean that we might not send it forward on its own at some point, but I think we want to lay it on the table for consideration in a potential policy bill, but that may not be the end of it. So okay. I think there's some good suggestions that you may want to augment it a little bit before it would be sent for debate by the full legislature or for the full Senate.
Chair.
So thank you very much for your work on this. It's great. So, Senator Wolf. Senate File 408, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I said mine would probably only take about 10 minutes, and I guess you're giving me 12. So, what this bill does, it's a short, simple bill here. This is a bill that is for school district employees who pay dues to Education Minnesota. And what it is requiring Education Minnesota to send a itemized copy every year to the dues-paying members and fair share payers as well, simply stating what our dues have been used for. And sorry, I say our because I'm a member, so I should say what members' dues are being paid for. And I believe Education Minnesota will probably step in here and say that this already happens, and I will argue that I've been in 6 school buildings and a teacher for 24 years, and I don't think I've ever seen a report. And so what this does is the information might be there and available. However, it is up to the teachers and the other paying members of the district to go and find it. And so what our dues entail, for me personally, well, everyone pays, I shouldn't say everyone, if you're a full-time teacher, you pay $211 to the National Education Association, you pay $405 to Education Minnesota, and then you also pay a varying amount to your local. At my school, it's $90. So what this bill is doing is simply saying for that $405 that I send and that those of us who are, whether we're full members or fair share payers, for the money that we send to the union, we would like to know what that money is being spent on. And that's simply what it is.
Okay. Is there any, are there any questions that anybody has of Senator Wolf before, I believe we have Ms. Allswiger would like to have some, has something to say about this subject.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, one question, Senator Wolf. Just, and this might be a little bit technical, but on line 1.7, when you say shall provide, what do you mean? Do you mean that they need to mail this to every member? Do they need to post it on a bulletin board? Do they need to send an email? What, is there a specific thing you had in mind that
the intent is for it to be provided to the individual. So whether the school districts want to put it in the POs of the individuals or mail it. I know we get in our POs our stubs for our paychecks, so that would be an okay place. It's simply the idea is that it's getting to the dues payer, not simply going up somewhere to be available. Honestly, I don't even know what month of the year it becomes available to go find. I do know before I came, I looked on my bulletin board. It's not there. So it's one of those things that's too vague right now for those of us who would like to see what our dues are being used for.
And Madam Chair, Senator Wolf, I assume that you're talking about a detailed and itemized annual financial report.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, and perhaps Senate Counsel could give us some advice about, I'm concerned that the shall provide language is maybe not encompassing the intent of the author and what maybe it is. I'm just asking that question if there's some other language that might be more useful to reach the goal that the author has in mind.
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, we can talk about that as fires come up. And
Madam Chair, question?
Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wolf, have you brought this request up at a Education Minnesota? I assume you have your annual meetings. Has not necessarily you, but has this been raised at a meeting? Has there ever been a proposal or a vote taken on this? Has it been discussed amongst you and your colleagues?
In an official meeting, sorry,
Senator
Madam
Wolf.
Chair.
Senator Wolf.
Senator Bonham. We do get an itemized statement from our local, and that was a local decision that we received that. I have not in an official Education Minnesota meeting, and part of the problem is that would, again, I think that would be difficult for Education Minnesota to go, okay, we're going to send it to this local, these members of this local, or these members of this local, and each local having to make that request to Education Minnesota would be, I would think, more difficult to keep track of.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonham.
Senator Wolf, I was more thinking that I assume you vote on policies and rules at each annual meeting, that you would put forward a proposal or a resolution to have this be put in place. It seems like a leap to have first something come as a proposed law rather than, like, did it fail from another avenue?
Madam Chair. Senator Bonoff, again, I'm not real sure, honestly, if what annual meeting. I don't know. That's my point. I don't know, and I'm a member. I think it goes through the channels of our locals, so if our local has never brought it to the next level, then I can't say whether or not our local brought it to the next hierarchy, to the next hierarchy to be determined.
Ms. Allswiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. It's been a busy day. I would be more than happy to sit with Senator Wolf or, you know, any other, well, I don't have the time to sit with every member, but I'd be certainly happy to sit with Senator Wolf and describe some of the processes and certainly can share some of them here today. But first, I would need to clarify that the exclusive representative is actually the local unit that represents the local teachers. So what this bill does is puts an administrative burden on mostly volunteer treasurers that serve in each local district for the local unit, because the exclusive representative, again, is the Forest Lake Education Association or Education Minnesota ASIA. They are the exclusive reps. So now we would be asking teachers who are treasurers, elected as treasurers in their own unit, to provide this information to every single member. We think it's duplicative in that these items that are listed in the bill, many of them are already done, as I believe Senator Wolf has said. The financial report often is available to the members. They have possibly worksite reps, building stewards. They have membership meetings where budgets are presented, and they vote on their local dues, so they already have input into that. In terms of campaign expenditures of the exclusive representative, if a local teachers union is going to be involved in a campaign, once they hit a $100 expenditure towards any campaign, they must file with the campaign finance board, and all of that is public data. In addition, and that would even include for at the local district level, if they got involved in a levy referendum, a bond referendum, or a school board election, they have to file their campaign expenditures with the school board clerk.
Ms. Alfreger, can I... You know, I think what I was hearing, that there was some interest in finding out what the state organization does. Could you address, would you, maybe perhaps the terminology of the exclusive representative, if that means the local, then they don't have any obligation to be a member of the state organization and the national? Or I think the interest, she's already indicated that the local information is more accessible, mm-hmm. but the state information, and possible, I don't know about the national, is not, and that was what she was interested in having made available. Addressing it to you, rather than walk through all of those things as it pertains to the local,
Madam Chair, if that's not clear, then maybe we need to add language, because you are correct. It is not referring to the local. It is referring to Education Minnesota, who is currently our statewide.
So could you address it, if that change is made, what, how you would handle or deal with that?
Okay. I would say the very same thing, that Education Minnesota files with the Campaign Finance Board, and all of that information is sent there, and that report is quite lengthy. It would be extremely expensive to send even just that campaign finance board report to, we believe, to the members. Our salaries and much of the activity of the Union of Education Minnesota is filed with the Department of Labor as required. Fair share is calculated, and it's related to bargaining contracts and so on. All of that information is public data as well. While this would not require a fiscal note for the state, it certainly would for whether it be the local union or the state organization. And as I said, I think a lot of this is duplicate efforts and very burdensome either for the local or for the state organization. We don't have any interest in hiding the things that we're already doing and are publicly reported. There's certainly access through governing board members. We have a representative convention where we have approximately, and please don't hold me to this number, but around 800 delegates that vote on a number of processes. And we have a governing board who votes on the budget, reviews expenditures, has the opportunity to know all about what is happening. And
Ms. Oswick, how difficult would that be for the several things that you've mentioned of different places to have links that you might send to Senator Wolf or to all the members of the committee that would be the kind of the compilation of the things, whether it's the budget that you said you filed the salaries, I don't know what else, with the Department of Labor, of that report, of, you know, obviously we can go into campaign finance and get that, but the link to those things, how hard would that be to be able to provide that electronically so that people could examine that, both individual members with there, but for those of us that would may want to do it but not have the time to go digging and not know where they are?
Madam Chair, I don't know. I'd have to find that out. I do think that there is a real question about, is this something that should be a state law to dictate how a teachers union should operate? What do we require of businesses? Do we get into mandating businesses to do reports such as this?
Well, Ms. Alsweiger, do you have sources of income outside of the dues of your members? Because it's all state money that's flowing through the teachers to your organization. And I think that maybe, you know, that would be interesting to know if you're functioning just with dues, because that is all public money.
Madam Chair, I believe so. I know that there are times when NEA or AFT grants back some funding to Education Minnesota. However, that is still dues money.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments. One is perhaps Council can take a look at. There may be a question about the use of the term exclusive representative that might need to be modified to get at the issue that Senator Wolf is bringing up. If that really does mean the local unit and what we're really talking about is the parent unit, there may have to be some modification of that to make sure it's referring to the right thing. But I think to the more substantial issue that Senator Ms. Alsweiger brings up is whether or not it's appropriate. I would argue that that she is right. For most private organizations, we do not require this kind of data to be distributed. If you're a member of a chamber of commerce or something, I don't think the legislature would have the right to do that. But we do require people to be members of this organization, and that is a state law. And I think it's only reasonable that if we're going to require people to pay money to an organization, then it ought to be required that those organizations should tell members how they spend the money. I think that's fair. So I would argue that as long as we have the structure that we have, that this is not unreasonable. I do recognize there may be a cost, but if you have email addresses of members and links to the information and put together, I mean, I don't think it would be too burdensome financially. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to say that. But anyway, I would argue that it's not unreasonable given the structure that we have. But I think that there may be some issue with the language that we have in the bill, that it may not refer to the organizational level that the author intends, and we should perhaps get some suggestions on that.
Senator Nelson, we are going to have to wrap up here. We're being waited for. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, let's just be very clear. The government, we do not want to be duplicative, and we do not want to cause expensive mandates. That is the last thing that we should be doing. But my question is, I think, from what I understand, you already have all this data compiled for your fair share members. Isn't that a requirement that all fair share members get a report every year about all expenditures? And so my question would be, is it really that hard to share that via an email to all members?
Ms. Alsweiger?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, that is something outside of the department that I work in. I really can't answer that question at this point.
So, Ms. Alsweiger, I think we're raising some issues that if you haven't been busy enough, that will make you just a little bit busier. Get some answers.
Madam Chair, yes, you are doing a very good job of making my job even more important.
Senator Kreif, do you have a quick question, and then we will lay this bill on the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Alsweiger, I guess I have just a comment. It seems to me, to your members that don't have an option to join your organization if they want to be a teacher. You mentioned that it wouldn't be a fiscal note against the state, but it would cost your organization some money. To do this electronically, I can't see why it would very much. And to me, full disclosure is something that corporations are forced to do in many cases. I'm not sure why your organization would not want to do the same thing. And if it did cost you some money, for the hundreds of dollars they pay you, it seems like a small price to pay, even if you had to put a stamp on this and send it to them.
Madam Chair, I also want to point out that I believe that school districts have to post their budgets of what they pay, and we are receiving part of those dollars from the state, and those dollars in return are going back to pay for our dues. So there is areas where we do have to have full disclosure of what the money is being spent for, and I think this is just an extension of seeing where our money is being spent.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Wolf. Thank you, Ms. Altschweiger. And we'll lay this on the table and revisit it. No more items on the agenda. The meeting is adjourned.